Welcome to the Pristine Ocean Podcast. I'm Peter Hall. In the podcast, you will hear from people around the world fighting the scourge of marine plastic litter.
The company revolves around this idea that we can turn the plastic into something with value. So at the moment, it's not of any value to anyone. So if we can put a price on it and turn it into a resource for the local people, you can't change people's mindsets over this sort of stuff. You need to change the plastic.
Before the age of modern chemistry, alchemists dreamt of turning lead into gold. In the age of plastic waste, the new alchemists dream of turning old shoes into black gold, a process that converts waste plastic into oil. This is the promise of pyrolysis. Although the chemistry of pyrolysis is well understood, the commercial application is still in its early days. Entrepreneurs are asking the question, can we make money out of pyrolysis while preventing plastic from destroying the environment? Can pyrolysis be the solution to the plastic waste crisis? I talked to one entrepreneur who has launched a pyrolysis demonstrator on Lombok, an island in Indonesia. He and his team have set up a pyrolysis reactor that will digest 1 ton of plastic waste per day and convert this into oil. This oil can be further distilled to diesel. On May the 29th, 2021, to great fanfare and with many dignitaries, his pyrolysis demonstrator was fired up and started devouring plastic waste. The aim of the demonstrator is to convince investors to get aboard. What seemed like an overnight success was years of toil and trouble in the making. The story starts in Tasmania, Australia. Andrew Sinclair grew up there. He learned to work with machinery, large and small, worked in different industries in Australia and in Southeast Asia before setting up a yacht chartering company with his wife Katerina in Malaysia. A key moment was when Andrew and Katerina landed on a remote island.
Yeah, so there's an island called Koh Tarratau. It's actually where they shot the first Survivor series. So there's really nothing on that island at all, apart from an old broadcast station that's now overgrown. They just left it behind, and you wouldn't know it because it's, yeah. So it's just a pristine beach with crystal clear water and a jungle right behind it. And, you know, when you've got a place like that all to yourself, it's one of those experiences in life that you really thank God that you're alive. And but when we walked along this beach, from the high tide mark right up into the jungle, is about 2.5 feet deep with just plastics.
A remote, pristine beach with piles of plastic. You can shake your head and wonder where it all came from and then just try and forget about it. Or you can take action. They decided they couldn't just remain observers to the problem. They wanted to do something, to make an impact. They started brainstorming ideas, what they could do with their yacht charter background. The first idea they tried was to try a type of luxury beach cleanup by having guests pay to clean up the beaches.
Initially, our idea would be to start some sort of holiday package where you could come and camp on one of these beaches. We were going to set up like a glamping type of an idea, which involves sailing as well. So we'd sail them around. So it would be like a sailing / glamping type of deal. And we would work on one beach at a time, go from one beach and just clean the entire place up using landing barges and quad bikes and a bit of manpower and try and make it fun and something that people get involved with. And, that was something we explored initially, and then, that was like, oh, well, what are you going to do with it all once you got it? Like, you're going to take it to a landfill somewhere?
Landfills are easy to set up and are the only option in many places. Badly managed landfills provide breeding grounds for disease-carrying insects. They attract wildlife that eat the plastic and allow toxins to leak into the groundwater. Well-managed landfills? Well, they just fill up fast. Andrew's focus moved from cleaning up the plastic to finding a disposal solution that did not involve landfill. He imagined a machine that would eat the plastic.
Because we wanted like a final solution, you know, like the ultimate solution. Clicking around online, looking at different things, and the pyrolysis thing comes up.
When the pyrolysis thing came up, Andrew and Katerina thought this might be the answer that they were looking for. They found a reference to a pyrolysis reactor. It would eat 1 ton of plastic a day and produce between 500 and 700 litres of oil. They made a trip to China to speak to the manufacturers.
Yeah, we went and saw them. They have an amazing workshop. This was in China. But they didn't have a unit operational. They were just building this stuff. So we said, okay, so where is it? You know, can we see it? And actually, right in Thailand, where we were, there was a guy running these machines.
They visited a working pyrolysis reactor in Thailand. That's where they struck gold. Not only were they able to see a working installation, but they found a mentor in an area where they were both novices.
He's been a real inspiration for us, and he's been a real teacher for us. You know, he's one of those guys that doesn't hold back, and, you know, there's a few things he won't tell us, but actually he's told us pretty much everything we know.
They were now convinced that this was going to be the project that they would sink all their time and energies into for the next years. They also knew that they would have to dig into their own pockets to finance it.
We started to build the business plan. We got the real stats on what the output is. We started looking at the fuel sale prices, the labour costs. We were doing this while we were living on the boat, and we were anchored off Langkawi, which is in between Thailand and Malaysia. And just really, like, I think we spent about a year and a half on this business plan and looking at different other things we could mix in. And then we did go to the government there in Langkawi and start talking about it. And they had a bit of an attitude about what we were doing. They didn't like the fact that we were expats coming in about this. And actually there, the waste management is all already privately owned and operated by some pretty heavy dudes. So we were just like, yeah, we were a bit up and down on whether we should actually do it there. We started to think about where else we could go.
By chance, they heard about Lombok, an island in Indonesia, just east of Bali.
Well, yeah, we were sort of in that mind. Okay, we should start to look somewhere else. Let's think about this. And then a friend of ours said, "Hey, man, have you guys ever been to Lombok before?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I have, but when I was like 22, it was beautiful." He's like, "Yeah, you should go." And so we thought, oh, why not? You know, let's get on the plane and go down there and have a look.
Arriving on Lombok, they felt welcome. But more importantly, they found an environment that was open to their ideas.
We really saw something here that was quite amazing. There's a lot of people, a lot of action, a lot of, you know, they have this zero waste campaign that was generated by the vice governor here. Lots of beach cleanups, lots of small waste banks that were set up mainly to teach young kids and the community about waste and why they shouldn't be throwing their plastic in the river and why it's important to do the right thing. And yeah, that's this movement, and I loved it.
Why do you think it was possible for your ideas to take root in Lombok and not somewhere else?
I think it's like the attitude of the people is like that in Indonesia, where they actually embrace being taught. They love new ideas. They appreciate people coming from anywhere with passion. They love their environment. They love their islands. They're still very close to the land and the ocean. They hate this plastic issue that they have, and it's this embarrassment for them. You know, when you say to them, look, mate, it's not just you, it's everywhere in the world. And they're like, oh, really? I thought it was just us. You know, no. I mean, it's a big issue. It's one of the best things about Lombok is its people. You know, they're so beautiful, and they... Even though they'll have nothing, they'll still want to, you know, share you lunch or invite you to dinner and this kind of thing. They're just incredibly generous and beautiful.
They moved to Lombok and started planning a pilot installation for the pyrolysis reactor they had seen in China. But it was a long slog.
It was like a very tough few months trying to figure out where to start, because it's a new sort of company and no one really knew where we should start. We're not here to start a hotel. We're not here to start a franchise company or import cars or anything like that. We're here to do this recycling, which isn't being done. Then we spent 2 years figuring out what paperwork we needed to fill out. It was a real, nobody knows, you know.
On the 29th of May 2021, the team went live. Since then, they are producing oil from the waste plastic. And Andrew is already dreaming of a series of 20-ton machines that will make the operation more profitable.
Well, at the moment, we have all of our licensing requirements. We have building permits. We're ready to go for the 20 ton per day facility. So what we're doing now is working with the Regency government, with the NTB government, on a contract agreement where everyone understands who's doing what. So for this facility, we're looking at an investment for $7 million US. But this facility also includes the biodigestion units, like bioreactors. So with the bioreactors, there'll be 250 tonne per day for cardboard, food waste, organic waste. The idea is that we produce methane from those reactors. We'll be running our own electricity and taking our heating fuel from those bioreactors. So we won't be using diesel or petrochemicals to heat the reactors. We'll be using methane. Yeah, we'll be doing a good thing by using the methane as a fuel.
How are you going to finance this expansion? Where are you going to get the $7 million? Are you going to rely on donations?
We need a lot of investment for this, and we wouldn't rely on grants and donations.
I guess you have a way of making this not just commercially successful, but will satisfy all the stakeholders.
Yeah, it's taken us a few years to come up with a business plan and to find the right technology, work out some way so that it's actually an attractive investment for investors and a good deal for the governments and a good deal for the local people as well.
But the shareholders will want to see profits. How can you make money out of this?
Because we can turn it into fuel, then we selling the fuel at the local market rate. We make a profit, our investors make a profit, and they get paid for their plastic. So that's the essence of the company.
But you won't be collecting the plastic yourselves. You'll be paying collectors to bring it to you, right?
So we're basically opening our doors to anyone who wants to go out and collect the plastics.
Now, you are a for-profit company, but you're aiming to create social good. What about the trade-offs?
I mean, just because we're a for-profit company doesn't mean we can't be a good company. You know, we can't be a company that does it doing something for not just for the shareholders. The whole point of the company is to engage with the community to create a market so that the plastic has got value.
You have set up a working demonstrator on Lombok. You've attracted the interest of investors. You've reached out to NGOs to create a plastic waste collection network. And you've got the government authorities on board with your plans. What's the vision for the next few years?
You know, the vision actually is to have Lombok clean within 2 years from now. So it looks more like Tasmania.
Andrew, you've gone all the way from seeing plastic waste on that remote island to breaking out with a commercial organisation that does good in the world. What do you think about that?
That amazes me that you can start out with a vision and with an idea and it can come to reality. I love that about life. To have purpose and to be driven and have your ideas come into reality and it's really standing there and it's working. Like you have a sense of achievement, proud moment, and then you just move on because you've got to keep going. You've got to do the next part.
Andrew, thanks for talking to us today and all the best with this great project.
Okay, thank you so much, man. That's really nice.
That was Andrew Sinclair from Geo Trash Management. You can find out more about GTM in the program notes. That's it for this week. Please do subscribe to the Pristine Ocean Podcast, the podcast that speaks to people around the world who are fighting the scourge of marine plastic litter.